When devotees come together for kirtan, it's really nice, isn't it? And some of our devotees, Mukunda's kirtans are very sweet, very nice. So, chanting from the heart. The topic, chanting from the heart, is something that we often hear. And I thought to discuss it. Some of you were present for the Memorial Day weekend event on empathic communication, and I spoke at length on from the heart, expanding on a verse from Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we're going to touch on that verse again, and some of the images, like this one, is from that same presentation. But chanting from the heart. Part of our reason for coming together is to enhance the quality of our chanting. Certainly quantity also helps when we're attentive, but chanting from the heart, takes a while to get there. Immersion, absorption is when we're chanting from the heart. So, sometimes we act from the platform of the mind, and sometimes from the platform of the heart. You know, the right brain, left brain thing. The head and the heart. In order to, in our relationship with Krishna, to be in our relationship with Krishna, we have to naturally choose to act from the heart, serve Him from the heart. Sometimes we don't. We serve, we go through the motions of serving. It's something like, you know, the distracted chanting is something like you invite somebody to your home, you call them, they extend an invitation, they come to your home, and when you receive them, your attention is over here and your attention is over there, and you're fidgeting with different things and not being attentive to the person who you've invited to come. It's impolite. And when we're chanting, we're calling Krishna, and Krishna comes immediately, no delay, doesn't take any time. He's instantly present through His name. And to be in our relationship with Krishna is the term from the heart, making an offering to Him. But chanting from the heart or acting from the heart is not just a one-time event. Yeah, I remember I did some chanting. It was like that. Yes, we're at the unsteady bhakti, and sometimes it's stronger, sometimes weaker. But acting from the heart is it's not an event. It's an ongoing journey. Bhakti is an ongoing journey. It's a wonderful journey, and our mind is the main obstacle. The journey is this process of bhakti, or serving from the heart. So there's an important verse which we spent a lot of time in Gita Nagari discussing, this very important verse from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's Rupa Goswami's main verse that summarizes the entire lesson that he teaches about bhakti. So let's say it together. Anya vilashata shunyam jnana karma janavritam anukoyena krishnano shilanam bhaktir uttama. This is a nice translation. This is so Junajivana was commenting there's some of the translation of what some of those verses were different. It's Jiva Goswami Sandarbha's Bhakti Sandarbha in particular, where Bhanuswami has translated it. And it's not just lifting the translation from Bhagavatam, it's Bhanuswami's translation, having to do connected with the commentary of Jiva Goswami. Words chosen. So this is similar. He translated Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. The highest bhakti, that's Bhakti Uttama, is defined as continuous service or emotions directed towards Krishna, his expansion forms, or others related to him, with a pleasing attitude towards Krishna. It should be devoid of desires other than the desire to please the Lord and unobstructed by impersonal gyan, materialistic rituals of karma, or other unfavorable acts. Jnana, karma, adi, or other unfavorable acts. Anavritam. Unobstructed by or devoid of. So, spend a little time with this because it's a short class. Just listening to Srila Prabhupada while having breakfast this morning, speaking in London on Chapter 1 Bhagavad Gita to an audience that was a 2.5 hour class, divided into different parts because it was so long, because the people who were hearing were educated and very interested in asking, probing good questions. So, the emphasis that Prabhupada was making was Krishna is Bhagavan, not just Krishna and he's one of us, he's Bhagavan. Meaning, he has all opulences in full, and one of those opulences is all knowledge. His knowledge is not and cannot be imperfect. That's Bhagavan. So if we're going to hear from Bhagavan, we must not make some interpretation. This means that. It's not allowed. You take the words from Bhagavan, if he's one of us, then you can say this means that, but not with Bhagavan. So, those that don't take Krishna as Bhagavan, then they tend to interpret, and he calls that cheating. It's disrespectful to Bhagavan, Krishna, and it's cheating. This doesn't mean that, this means this, that means that, that is as it is message. And those that interpret, they have a good time using Sanskrit rules. It's not working. Using Sanskrit rules with verbal root. It's one of, I don't know, I'm not a Sanskrit scholar, but verbal roots, dhatu, tells you meanings of things. So scholars that interpret, they take a term, they go to the dhatu, and then they start interpreting. Dhatu can have different meanings, and in this case it means such and such, so this means that. That's their procedure. But the Vedas are not to be understood that way. Tarka, apratishta. You can't reach any conclusions about Vedic wisdom by tarka, by logic and reason, interpretation, etc., etc. Nonetheless, having said that, our acharyas, like Jiva Goswami, when commenting on this verse, uses such rules to establish as the basis and support. Now, the essence is not the logic and reason of something, it's the descending knowledge coming from Lord Chaitanya that he heard from his uncle, Rupa Goswami, who heard directly from Lord Chaitanya, who was Krishna himself. So by that method, one can know conclusively. Nonetheless, to explain this verse, Jiva Goswami teaches there's a secondary meaning to the verse, or a portion of the verse, and that's what bhakti is not, jnana and karma. Just to embellish this, because it's a short class. Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. When a reporter asked Prabhupada, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's immediate reply, less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, just two things. The tendency to understand truth and reality by speculative power, you have to give it up. And the other is the tendency to become the enjoyer of fruitive activities and the objects of enjoyment that come from fruitive activities, you have to give it up. Then he said, generally, people are very attached to those things. So generally, it's a gradual process, but it takes less than a second, less than a moment. So that's the jnana karma dhyanavritam part. But it's that's what bhakti isn't. And then there's what bhakti is, and that's the primary, not the secondary, essence of bhakti and the essence of this verse. So anukulyena krishna anushilanam. So then Jiva Goswami goes on to say, to understand that phrase, you have to go to the dhatu, or the verbal root. And the verbal root is shil. Shil means activity or conduct, like, you know, Vaishnav etiquette, your courses on Vaishnav etiquette. That's shil. Vaishnava shil. Shila. Krishnanu shilanam. So he says this word shil, the verbal root, has two parts. And it's right in the translation. That's why Bhano Swami included it. Is continuous service or emotions. So the moving part has three parts, three elements. What the body does, what the mind does, and the mood. So your body and your mind can be doing this, and the mood can be I'm comfortable, and they can be I'm uncomfortable, or something I'm tired, or something. You can be some, you know, different moods. So all three are moving parts, and then the non-moving part, that's this, a pleasing attitude towards Krishna always. Anushilanam. Krishna anushilanam. Anukulyena Krishna anushilanam. The body, the senses, the emotions, the mood, everything directed towards Krishna with a pleasing attitude. That's what bhakti is. And continuous. So uninterrupted. So there's practice, but then when it's matured, it's uninterrupted. Like Kunti's prayers, like the Ganges flowing forever downstream towards the sea. That my mind, and where the mind goes is where the legs go, and where everything, the senses go. Always towards Krishna alone. Ananya Vishaya is her term. No other vishaya, object of love. To serve from the heart, we need to align our consciousness with the heart of bhakti. So then, those of you that are with us in Gitanagar, you saw this image. There's a heart, and inside the heart, there's another heart. Inside that's another heart. That the heart of bhakti is this anukalyena krishna anushilanam. The anushilanam, that's what the senses do and the mind does, is processes of bhakti. And Krishna is the objective of that service. And then at the heart, anukalyena, is this intention to please Krishna. That's at the heart of bhakti. So to chant from the heart is for the pleasure of Krishna. And to do any of the nine processes of devotional service, it's for the pleasure of Krishna, cooking for Krishna. One of our congregation members, it was just a comment in the course of a home visit, a room conversation with a gathering of people. This mother, one of our congregation members here, said, "I'm really struggling with cooking for Krishna." And I asked, "Could you explain?" She said, "All my adult life being married and then with children, I'm cooking for my family. And now I have to cook for Krishna. So I'm still cooking for my family." I thought it was very thoughtful. Because it's not just, the dovetail is, let's say, I like music, and then there's kirtan, so I like kirtan. Because really, I like music, it's just something I like, and it's connected to Krishna, and so I do it because it's connected to Krishna. That's a dovetail. It's a bhakti siddhanta phrase. But doing, that's the gona bhakti, not shuddha bhakti. Gona is a derivative of guna, or, you know, a secondary activity. There's the primary activity. The primary activity is with the intention to please Krishna. And that intention to please Krishna, it's already there. It's already there. It's not something we have to go out and find it. Install it on our hard drive. It's already there. It's dormant. And in the mature stage, it's prema. But the immature stage is sadhana. And even the sadhana. So partly I'm speaking like this way because we're going to have kirtan in a little while. And this is a nice meditation that our kirtan singer and singers, responders, can be meditating on. What's the difference of consciousness between, a delightfully musical kirtan and a delightfully musical kirtan where it's for the pleasure of Krishna? One of the nice things about kirtan before the deities is before the deities. Kirtan anywhere is nice. But kirtan before the deities is especially nice because it's, at least, it helps be in the consciousness that it's for the pleasure of the deities. And I have to get back to the topic, but my experience over the years is that the deities are very pleased when there's kirtan before them. And even if Shringar and everything else is very nice, without the kirtan before them, it's not the same. The deities derive pleasure from kirtan. And the deities derive pleasure by kirtan that's for their pleasure. And that's our pleasure. That's our greatest pleasure. It's a small item, but it's an essential item. It's like Jiva Goswami's comment that archana, one of the nine processes of bhakti, is incomplete without kirtan. And it's when the kirtan is for the pleasure of the archa vigraha, the deity form, then it's perfect. The perfection is there. Without kirtan, it's not. And therefore, of the nine processes, this is the most important one. It leads to the others, and it gives real life to the others. Not that the others are dead without it, but it gives real life to them. Here's another for example. I commented to Mukunda, this little tambura machine when he was playing during kirtan. It's very nice. But I noticed that Badahari carries one with him all the time. It's just part of his travel paraphernalia with kirtan. So I've been to multiple japa retreats with Badahari and his good wife Koshrupa. Certainly not all of them that they've been to, but the first one that they came to was this festival of the holy name. He was the guest of honor during the first few that we had. And she came to one and commented during the sharing period, I've been to many japa retreats. And this is the first time I've been at a japa retreat that's in a temple in front of the deities. It wasn't exactly a japa retreat. It was the 64-round day. And she said it was amazing. In contrast to some really nice places, retreat centers that are expensive and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of them we were at together was in Ojai, California. It was up, way up on top of a mountain at a Buddhist monastery, not a Buddhist monastery, a Buddhist retreat center, and windows all around the place and looking out, and there's this big mountain on the other side and a big valley. We're at top of a mountain and then a river, and then over there is the ocean. It was really fantastic scenery. But this is better than fantastic scenery. This is in the presence of Radha Krishna in their deity forms, Kishore Kishori. Very special. Very special. So acting for their pleasure with the intention that's who we really are is to please Krishna. That's our original consciousness. That's at the heart of bhakti. Once we reawaken our inherent intention to please Krishna, we can carry out our actions from the platform of the heart. So that means all of the other eight processes of bhakti from this one. The primary action necessary to become closer to Krishna is the chanting of his holy name. So many hearts on that bhakti tree. And then there's the material life, that image on the left, that's the blazing fire of material existence over on the left, that's what happens when there's a bomb, and over on the right is what happens before the bomb. And here's a gentleman counting all his money, and people watching television, and eating abominable things, and building an Ugra Karma civilization. And then here's the chanting of the holy name. Together. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Name Vakevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatir Anyata. For spiritual progress in this age of Kali, there is no alternative, there is no alternative, there is no alternative to the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Adi Lila reference. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu propagated this understanding. Chanting Krishna's name can be uplifting, enlightening, and natural. We had this real nice event a week ago where teenagers, Mukunda and Shruti, were the organizers of a nice event where teenagers from, was the intention was the Midwest, but they came from both coasts also, Seattle and Boston and East Coast, Virginia, to like 30, 35, whatever the number was, young people. And the topic that they had identified, the theme, was what was the language? Is Mukunda here? Huh? Why Krishna consciousness? Where's Mukunda? Huh? He stepped out. Okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's why choose Krishna consciousness, I think was. Why choose Krishna consciousness? So, you know, the first was like a brainstorming session. The kid said, you know, why choose Krishna consciousness? And I was really pleased, a little surprised, but a little pleased to say, here somebody said, I like it. I find it makes me very peaceful, and chanting makes me very relaxed, peaceful, happy. I mean, it's like chant to be happy. Hearing that from our younger generation devotees was really nice. But it's not always like that. Sometimes it can feel mechanical and dry and dutiful. That was, you know, the other side. What are some of the obstacles? Well, sometimes it's like this. And it's sometimes like this for all of us. Sometimes. In our loving relationship with Krishna, we strive to carry out our actions from a place of love, not merely on a basis of duty. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes extensively on this topic. They're on a different platform, duty and devotion or love. Duty is mode of goodness, love is transcendental. Now, duty can, the potential is, it can lead to love. But if it just stays on the platform of duty and the intention is not something we're paying attention to, like why am I doing this? Well, I'm supposed to do it. That's why I do it. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with doing things because you're supposed to do them. But the purpose behind the supposed to do them is to come to the mature stage, the loving stage. This is possible when we move from the head to the heart, when our mind, senses, and emotions are directed toward a single purpose. That's this Rupa Goswami verse, Anushilanam. There's, see the graphics, senses, and over here is the heart, and over there is the mind, and there's that fellow dangling, kind of like parachuting in for a landing. That purpose, what's that purpose? The single purpose is reuniting ourselves in the forgotten relationship we have with Krishna through the medium of the holy name. Now, it's not like the medium of the holy name means like it's a doorway to get to what's on the other side of the doorway. We came into the temple room, probably most of us, through those double doors over here. And the double doors are the medium to get into the temple room. But this is medium in a different sense, because the name and the destination, Krishna connection, reuniting ourselves in the forgotten relationship we have with Krishna, it's not a means to an end, it's a means and the end. Like, Prabhupada would say, what's the goal of chanting? Is more chanting. What does he mean by that? It's, you know, absorption in chanting and being connected with Krishna through the medium or through his name, because he and his name are not different. There's the obstacle, obstacle for that is we have false shelters. We're not able to call out the holy name with complete attention and surrender because we have false shelters. And we especially have our favorite ones. And we may not even be aware of what our favorite ones are, but they're aware of what Maya, Prabhupada explained this, Maya is very expert. She knows exactly where weaknesses are. And she connects us through prompts to our weakness. So we're trying to progress in Krishna consciousness while maintaining our weaknesses. It's like rowing a boat and keeping the anchor down. You don't make much progress rowing a boat when the anchor is down. You have to lift the anchor. If you're not prepared to lift the anchor, row, row, row your boat. You won't go gently down the stream. You won't go anywhere. It's not so like we discussed this morning. An appropriate detachment. In order to accept our true original shelter, we need to let go of the false impermanent ones. That's an artha nivritti process. Once we let go of false shelters, our minds, senses, emotions, probably should be singular, our mind, senses and emotions are directed by a single purpose, same purpose, the intention to please Krishna. Remembering that the intention to please Krishna is who we are on the soul level. That's who we are. We're entities. Prabhupada was explaining this so nicely. Prabhupada was explaining this so nicely to these people in London. It was really nice. He was arguing against impersonalism. You know, he liked to do that. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Paschacha Desatanine. So he was doing it. Bhagavad Gita chapter 1. And saying, some people say, oh yeah, it was chapter 2, never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. First person, second person, third person. That's what Prabhupada was saying. And never was there a time, nor at present are we not individuals. And going into the future, Krishna is saying, when you become liberated, it's just one entity. He never says that. But the impersonalists say that. So then if you're saying Krishna doesn't know what he's saying, then he's defective. But if he's Bhagavan, then he's not defective. You may be defective, but he's not defective. And never was there a time. So that never was there a time means you don't become one, because never was there a time when there is non-individuality. Past, present, future. So then he went to the Eko Bahu Sham. Eko, the one, became many. So their impersonalists say, aha, just reverse the process and the many become the one. But Krishna says the living entities are eternally. And so that the part has a purpose as part of the whole, and that's for the pleasure of the whole. So we just accept our position that our purpose, this singular purpose, is using this language here, is the intention of pleasing Krishna. That's at the heart of bhakti. It's our heart, our spiritual heart, the soul's heart, the intention to please Krishna. Somehow, if that can become awakened, and the primary means for that is chanting, done in the proper mood, in the proper manner, in the proper association. So we're going to have some time tonight during the kirtan. We had several kirtans. We'll have time tomorrow chanting japa. And all of this is preparation for 32 up to 64 round day on Sunday with that kind of absorption. The intention to please Krishna, absorption. At least turn our head in that direction, turn our mukha, our face, turn our attention with that sustainable intention, sustainable because it's who we are. We're distracted, but it's who we are. So it's an easy place to go back to because it's not artificial, it's who we are. It's totally natural. Then we can call out the holy name from the core of our heart. When we offer our soul, our very self, at the lotus feet of the holy name in a mood of complete surrender, inattentive and mechanical chanting will cease. Nice graphic. Another heart with the holy name. And offering ourselves, our very self, the soul implies then the moving parts, the mind, very moving, the body, generally moving, and our mood, pretty much moving. I shared something, can't remember where I was. Shared something somewhere along the way. Oh, at the home program. Many of those of you from Chicago, you know the Premananda's wife, Narantra. Certainly, Mukunda knows him. And there's another Narantra who is a Prabhupada disciple that lives in Los Angeles. And he was attending a housewarming of a family that he knew from Los Angeles, moved from Los Angeles to Texas. They bought a home, so he was invited to come and attend the program in their home. And he stayed for almost a week. And so we knew each other from when he was Bhakta Nik. Now he's, you know, Narantra. So there was some sharing going on during this gathering. But I asked him to answer one of the questions and he shared like this. He said, I'm a musician. Subal remembers that discussion the other evening. Then he said, there's music and then there's being locked in. And then he elaborated what he meant. There's the rudiments that you practice and practice and practice, and sometimes it's just you're not really locked in, and sometimes you're really locked in. And then it's really dynamic. And so for us, the locked in is the intention to please Krishna. It's not the mechanics. There's mechanics, but the essence is not the mechanics. The essence is the intention to please Krishna, or the intention to be in our relationship with Krishna, the intention to connect with Krishna through that sound vibration, the medium of his name, because the medium of his name is him. Connect with Krishna from the heart, with the intention to please him. It's not about us and our happiness and what we're feeling. Burijan wrote an essay because, turn to face the ladies. He, Burijan, and Sachinandan Swami quietly, out of sight for some number of years, 5, 6, 7, whatever the number of years was, after everybody left Vrindavan, because a lot of people go to Vrindavan during Kartik, and after Vrindavan, excuse me, after Kartik, Govinda, really quickly. I mean, drastically initially and then kind of others trickle. So it gets back to normal Vrindavan, kind of. So during that period of time, Burijan and Satchinanda Swami, some like a week, 10 days after everybody's kind of gone back to their places from Kartik month, they went out of the way over by Varsana and Govardhan to hold a japa retreat. Shh. It wasn't advertised or promoted or anything. It was just people that they knew just through their relationships were interested in going more deeply in chanting. Now it's become, you know, a well-known thing, but they were kind of quietly doing it for some time. So he wrote this little short, direct, strong essay about not seeking what he called high experiences. Because sometimes devotees value the quality of their experience chanting because it was way up there. And they're aspiring for something way up there. And that's his advice is, it may come, it may not come, but the aspiration is not, let me have this high experience. The aspiration is connect with Krishna. And that can be whatever it is. And that's up to Krishna. It's between you and Krishna, but it's up to Krishna. Connecting with Krishna, that's the happiness. Whatever it looks like, feels like. For the pleasure of Krishna, because that's reality. He's at the center. He's the primary enjoyer, and our existence is his happiness. That's why we exist. What Prabhupada was saying to this audience in London. We exist for the pleasure of Krishna. That's who we are. That's our existence, for the pleasure. So if that's the meditation, chant in that mood, and all the other activities that you do will become saturated in that mood. From chanting flows all the other moods of devotional activity. Acting from the heart means acting from a place of who we are. We are eternal servants of the all-knowing, all-loving, all-attractive Supreme Personality, Godhead, Krishna. Fancy. This is the last slide. With a prayerful attitude, try to call upon Krishna from the core of your heart. My dear Krishna, I am your eternal servant. Allow me to serve you by chanting your loving holy name. And Krishna, please accept me. This is the last slide, so just say one more thing. We're supposed to end at 5 o'clock? 5:30? Hey. So, get ready with the portable microphone. Some time ago, I was expressing Krishna, chant in this mood with your arms raised like this. Please accept me. Privately, 2 weeks later, somebody wrote a letter saying, I'm disturbed. You mentioned, please accept me. But how could Krishna not accept you? So, you know, why are you asking Krishna for something like that? My explanation was, it's Krishna's willing, but we're not willing. And then it was, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. So they remained disturbed. Then some more time passed. And they came across several instances where Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressed the same. And the way in which it was expressed, and perhaps because it was expressed by them instead of me, this devotee became very peaceful. It's like a child reaching for mother or father. No, mother and father don't need a prompt. But when there's a prompt, that child raises their arms like this, mother and father are ready to pick up the child and have the child feel shelter. So that's the message. Appealing to Krishna for his shelter. That's Sharanagati. So it's an appeal for Sharanagati. That's all. In one lecture, Prabhupada explained, this is the Maha Mantra. It's just very simple. Krishna, please accept me. That's all. Now, accept me is a big package word or phrase. It's, again, return to your loving shelter. Again, return to your eternal service. Again, the consciousness that your pleasure is everything, etc. Krishna, please accept me. So when we have kirtan following this, I invite you, encourage you, think of this image, think of the message, think of calling from the heart in this way. And when you chant your japa tomorrow morning and the mind starts to wander, think of this message for the pleasure of Krishna from the heart. Any discussion?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, you mentioned like the mind is different from heart. And when you talk about intentions or when we talk about discrimination, we do that using our mind, like whatever we hear or whatever we are, we use our mind to do our thinking process. Or if you want to think correctly, we use our intelligence. But what is this heart?
This classic question. I don't mind. It's different terms, mind and heart. How are they differ? How are they similar? That's your question. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
They are similar, and they're different. You know what a Venn diagram is? You've heard that term.
That's a Venn diagram. Over here is where they're different, and over here is where they're similar.
So they're used interchangeably in many cases. Because the mind, we hear scripture tell us, is the place where there's thinking, feeling, and willing, right? Thinking, feeling, willing. And then comes action. Before action, there is the mind. Before any action, thinking, feeling, willing. And so Paul, that's a tricky microphone stand. Okay. He knows the secret. Shh. So the feeling part is thinking, feeling, willing. That's a mind function. Now heart is also feelings. So that's the likeness part. And heart is, this is, language depends upon the person using it. There's the dictionary one, and then there's the common usage of the term, and then there's an individual. So for me, at least, heart means our deeper held convictions. And with those deeper held convictions, there's feelings. That's the distinction for me. How's that?
I mean, like, our feelings may be sometimes are not as correct.
Yes, correct. That's the mind. We don't trust the mind. Well, if we trust, to the degree we trust the mind, we're in trouble.
So when we are trying to achieve this goal of
we direct the mind with the intelligence towards some place, including the feelings that are within the mind. Supposing there's a negative feeling within the mind. We direct that, we don't like tuck it under the rug, we direct that negative feeling towards the lotus feet of Krishna. That's if the intelligence is operating. You want to say something more? You're okay? For the moment. Until 5 minutes from now, then you'll have another one. It's not a black and white. We're used to that kind of thing. You know, that's technology, IT people, like, you know, there's this box and there's that box, and you can't have something in two different boxes. It's not black and white. Subal.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that that it won't be possible for one to have been settled in that intention of pleasing Krishna without being free from false shelters. And the cure for false shelters, the purification of false shelters, is chanting the holy names, you mentioned. And when we chant the holy name, we have to approach it with the intention to please Krishna.
Yes.
So it's...
You heard very well.
Yes. Now, the false... So... While chanting Hare Krishna, while chanting the holy name, basically we just come to that position of, I'm basically taken by these false shelters. I want to please you, but I can't, you know, get to there.
Well, you can't. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. I can get there, but I'm not there yet. I need your help.
Yeah.
I'm just editing as you're going along.
So, it's not easy, obviously.
Of course.
And
but
one
it's
thing,
easy also. It's
yeah,
easy.
The approach is easy.
Well, the alternative is a nightmare. And compared to the nightmare, this is easy.
Yes, when you say the alternative...
With Krishna's help, it becomes possible. Without Krishna's help, it's a nightmare.
Yes.
So, that's my comment on it's not easy. It's not easy. And it's easy. You heard Prabhupada say, process is very easy and then it's not easy. So go ahead. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you as you're
preparing
your question.
I was just recognizing myself with the example of the Mataji that you said that her intention to cook for the pleasure of Krishna was there, but she finds herself that she goes back to cooking for my family.
The bungee cord.
So I'm thinking, when I do kirtan, I'm thinking very specifically for the pleasure of Krishna, but it then goes back to, you know,
yeah,
my
like
training
music.
As a performer, you know, to please a crowd or something
and
like that.
And then you're not locked in. Then you're not locked in.
Right.
You know, to the bhakti life, you're locked into maybe, you know, whatever, something else. The riff, or the, you know, the melody, or the beat, or the something.
Yeah, thank you.
And that's the difference between material and spiritual. That's the distinction being made. So we're not there yet. But we need to proceed with faith, consistently exercised as far as we can over time. That's the message from this morning and now. Something else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you. Today the class was more about having our taking decision from our heart or following the heart when it comes to the matter.
Not just decisions, living from the heart.
Living from the heart, yes. I was just considering the Japa book. I was reading through it, and there are four different causes that have been explained in the Japa book that takes us away from chanting. And one of them is Hriday Dourbalyam.
One of them is?
Hriday Dourbalyam, weakness of the heart.
Yeah, okay.
So I was just trying to reconcile these two. On one hand, we are saying that we should follow the heart, decision by
the
heart.
No, okay. The word is heart, but don't get confused. Hridaya Dourbalyam is the conditioned tendencies of my feelings or the weakness of heart. And it's like what Subal was saying. The ideal, I'm inspired by the ideal, but I find myself over there in a distracted land because of weakness of heart. The resolve is not so firm. So that's the weakness of heart. I know better, but I'm doing the weaker. That's the weakness of heart. It's a phrase. The language, don't get caught up in.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So I have three different questions. So the first question is, from this lecture you have given a slide on taking a...
Slide on. There's the firecrackers are louder than you.
Slide which says on, we generally have a tendency or we already have taken false shelters because of which we are unable to go deep into it. So can you please tell me what is the ways to identify where we are taking false shelters? We think that we take...
You want to know, you want an inventory of false shelters? Is that what you're looking for? Some examples of false shelters?
Examples and also some...
Instances, like examples?
Tools to identify where...
Yours or anybody's or generic or what?
Generic and...
Customized?
Generic and...
How to identify my own...
Yes, Maharaj.
That's what you want to know?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. That's a little... Okay, sorry. Well, put your hand in your bead bag and see what happens. There's false shelter number one.
Okay. Yes, Maharaj.
And then you'll do that over the period of a week. Keep a notebook during your, 32-64 round day on Sunday and write it down how many different false shelters there are. We got a lot of them. That's how to. Now, devotees generally report, my mind goes to problem solving. My mind goes to scheduling my day. It's in short, past and future stuff. Anything but present. One mantra at a time or the moment or shelter in the name. So those are shelters. Driven by ignorance and passion. That's how to identify.
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj. And the second question, in the previous morning class, you have pointed out from Bhakti
this Sandarbha, morning's class.
This morning's class, okay. Yes. From the Bhakti Sandarbha, out of 9 process of devotional service, you have termed as chanting is the most essential one, and the rest of them will, you have to still do the rest of
They'll
them.
They'll be nourished by.
To nourish by it, yeah. So in this current lecture that you have given, you told your experience of deities will...
Speak slowly.
Oh, sorry. In this current lecture...
In this current lecture.
You have shared your experience that deities will get pleased if you perform kirtan.
Yeah.
So, I have a contradiction there.
Why? What's the contradiction?
If the deities are not pleased if we don't perform kirtan, so then how can I improve my bhakti? I'm not so good in doing kirtan.
I don't understand the question.
Okay. The
topic is pleasing the deity. If you chant in your room or in a mountainside and there's no deity, it's not like you're displeasing the deity and your chanting is going to be crummy. It's not that means deity isn't pleased. It's the deity is pleased when there's kirtan lovingly performed before the deity. And that is a wonderful reciprocation for the chanter chanting before the deity for the pleasure of the deity.
Deities will be pleased even if we do only chanting without...
Yeah.
I'm bad, very bad in kirtan,
yeah,
so I'm...
Yeah.
Thank you. Next. And the final question, Maharaj?
Thank you. Speak slowly.
How to make our obstacles as an opportunity?
How to do our what?
How to make the obstacles we face...
The wish, obstacles we
obstacles
face.
Obstacles we face okay. as an opportunity to grow in Krishna consciousness.
Oh, depend on Krishna. And if you don't depend on Krishna, you know what happens? Commonly, the obstacles get bigger and bigger. That's what happens. Krishna! Do Krishna a favor. Don't have him make the obstacles too big.
I think I didn't get that.
Yeah, it was a joke. We're doing ourselves a favor by not making the obstacles too big. So I said, do Krishna a favor. Don't make him make such big obstacles for you so that you can then call out to him feelingly.
Okay.
Do Krishna a favor. Don't make him do extra work.
That's very clear, Maharaj. Thank you.
That was a joke. Okay. Next. Over here.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. This question is regarding facing the dry patches in chanting.
Regarding faith.
No. Facing dry faces in the chanting, when we are chanting and we are in the dry patches where it feels very dry.
Okay.
And
when we're chanting and things are very dry, and you're facing that experience of dry chanting,
yeah,
that's the territory of your question, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like how you were saying that we are not seeking for big experiences, we are seeking for connection and depending
yes.
on Krishna.
Yes.
So, I personally feel that in those phases, one of the things that I'm recognizing is that I often find myself...
Bhangshi Dari, turn the volume up for her microphone.
I recognize that the urges of the mind become strong at that point. And then it's like, you know, when we hear that when we are chanting, it's me, my mind and the holy name. But at times the holy name is on the side and I'm struggling with the urge of the mind.
We're all familiar with that territory.
So, and it happens.
Sure,
so,
it happens. What to do?
And yeah, so it's like when I recognize that that's what's going on at that phase.
Good.
What steps I take to redirect in the proper mood, like in this particular lines that when we are offering service, we are doing it with that mood that Krishna, please allow me to serve you. I cannot impose my service on him. So the mood has to be softened. Mood has to be of request and humility. It's not that I cannot, no matter what I do, I have to understand the mood has to be proper and serving.
But sometimes you get pretty desperate and we're not even thinking about being gentle and requesting. It's just like, help. So you're a refined person. And, you know, some of us aren't so refined. It's a stage of development that we just turn to Krishna and say, please accept me. And rather than saying, if you so desire, please accept me. I'm appreciating your refinement. But it's right. Krishna doesn't have any obligation to do anything for us or anybody. Certainly, you know, forgetful, conditioned souls like each one of us. He has no obligation. But if the appeal is heartfelt, I mean, put it in real simple terms, your mother. And if your son or daughter reach to you and they don't say, if you so desire, please hug me. You don't have to, but you know, kindly, if you so desire, I want to feel your shelter, if it's okay with you. I mean, Krishna understands. The deeper problem is not a refinement, the deeper problem is just ignorance. And we turn that tension away from ignoring him towards him. And that's very pleasing. It's an indication of our wish to be in our relationship. And then refinement of that relationship, sure. You know, and the higher stages and the stages of the gopis, for example, or even the gopas, you know, they're defiant for the pleasure of Krishna. And there isn't anything else in their life than the pleasure of Krishna. So that's a further refinement. No, appreciating your good culture once again. That's your good culture, your good character. Being sensitive to, you know, Krishna may want to neglect me some more because I've been so rebellious for so long, etc. Okay. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, on the follow-up of Shubhra Mataji's question, I sometimes struggle to reach out to my mentors or to you when I'm facing some kind of obstacles, thinking...
The mind is making obstacles. Yes?
Yeah. So it's like they have already been providing me so much of guidance and mercy, everything, but still I'm whatever... not able to take it. So I don't want to cause them further trouble by sharing all these struggles or whatever. I go through that phase, and as you were describing, the struggle grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Mm.
At some point, it's just like I can't handle it anymore.
Well, each of us have our relationship with Krishna. And each of us have our obstacles blocking our relationship with Krishna. And with that, struggles with those obstacles that are blocking our relationship with Krishna. So it's, each person is a little different. But tolerating, it's a little bit like this discussion we had this morning about appropriate detachment, appropriate attachment. There's appropriate tolerance and there's appropriate intolerance, you know, like just over, break through the mind's whining and complaining and obstacle creating and put your foot down. You know, Krishna, my intelligence is sufficiently strong. Can you order my mind to just go sit down for a while? behave nicely. I want to be with you. Anyway, so put your foot down sometimes. Well, you know, tolerate or just neglect. That's another way of tolerating. Just, I know what that noise is. It's the mind taking my attention away from Krishna. I'm just not gonna invest attention in that. I'm withdrawing attention from over there and I'm positively placing attention over here. And that way I don't have to necessarily deal with the noise of the mind. I'm just giving through intelligence, directing the mind to a good place. And then the noise subsides because you're not paying attention to it. Rati? All the way in the back?
Guru Maharaj, I read in one of Sasyananda Maharaj's book that we should always meditate or chant the holy name not in the mood of achieving but in the mood of receiving. So I think just a clarification to what when you're answering Subhra Mataji's question, does it mean that Krishna is not obligated? That we need to be in a mood of receiving.
Need to be in a mode of receiving.
Then achieving. I mean, I think it's, both are good, but I think the nicer one would be to be in the mood of receiving the holy name rather than being in the mood of achieving that. Oh, I want to chant my rounds very nicely today. I'm connecting that to what your answer to Subhra Mataji's question of Krishna is not obligated, so it is nicer to be in the mode of receiving because otherwise, if we have expectations that I'm going to achieve and chant well, we may not be able, we may not get fulfilled, that wish may not be fulfilled.
Well, a qualified yes. And the qualified yes is similar to what I said just a moment ago. And that is, each of us are a little different. Our relationship with Krishna is a little different. The obstacles facing between us and our relationship with Krishna are a little different. And how we address those obstacles is a little different. We're individuals. Having said that, receiving certainly has its strength, because without receiving, where do we get strength? And once we have strength, we use it. And, you know, sometimes being a little assertive is needed. Sometimes being a little assertive with the mind is needed. That's Bhakti Siddhanta. So, but you can't do that until you have received. You just try to do that without having received mercy and spiritual strength and cleansing, then it's coming out of false ego. And it's not going to be effective nor satisfying. So, if Satchinandan Swami was here, we could ask him, I might want to ask him, what do you think of this question, Maharaj? Or is it your idea, never get strong and, you know, give direction to the mind. Just always be receiving and 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 receiving. And that's better, because when that position comes, the noise of the mind is gone. You don't have to get strong with the mind. It's just gone. Is that your recommendation or your idea? I think it's so. My position is it's different. Otherwise, what's Dridha Vrata? Great determination. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udari tivrena bhakti yogena. And bhakti yogena is senses engaged with sense activities. That's it. For Krishna's pleasure activity. That's the consequence of having received properly. It follows. You understand what I'm trying to say here? You want to add to this discussion?
I think the what you said makes sense, Guru Maharaj. But I think if I remember it right, what I read was, I mean, both options are nice, but I think the mood of receiving is nicer. That's what Maharaj was saying.
Okay, fine. My response to that is, one more time, it's preliminary, but it's not like that's all you, that's, it's not just forever better. Sometimes, I mean, look at Prabhupada. Look at Bhaktisiddhanta. No, with compassion, but it wasn't just receiving, it was giving. Prabhupada ki jai.